What's the matter? No. They didn't have those.
It only matters for a freezer.
Now, they weren't, I told you that supermarket was out of a lot of stuff.
Hello.
Hey, Ken, it's me.
Oh, okay, I am here.
What?
Hi, Amy. I wasn't sure if my headphones were working or not.
Yeah, they're working. As long as my headphones are working, I had to get my left headphones broke. I should have known when I was talking to Joe's mother, my mother-in-law, and she kept on saying, "I can't hear you, I can't hear you." And then it turns out they were very faint, but, you know, with an 87-year-old hearing, they didn't work.
Bummer.
Yeah. So I like
That's
your email.
Tough. Oh, good.
Did you see Bruce's email?
No. Did he answer me?
Bruce Witcher? Bruce Witcher didn't answer, but he finally read the thread. Look at your email when you get a chance. It's worth reading what he wrote. And before anyone else gets on, I noticed the email alert didn't go out for the meeting and the minutes weren't on the website. So I sent an email to Bruce Brazil, Daniel and Spencer, and Spencer said, "Well, no one told me I had to get the minutes out." And I sent him two emails with the information. I said, "Check your email from June 1st.
Okay.
But I also told him that it's okay to ask a lot of questions. We can go over it a whole bunch of times, and I realized perhaps to everyone's benefit, no one recorded the last meeting. So this meeting is recorded. But probably this part shouldn't be. We'll have to figure out how to edit it out, but I know you know how to do that.
Oh, God. I'm still dealing with a broken screen.
You have a new computer.
I know, and I dropped something. It was sitting on the floor up here, and I dropped something on it while it was closed, and it shattered a portion of my screen. And I just got a new screen that came in yesterday, and I didn't want to try to install it tonight.
That's probably a good idea. Hey, Robin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Amy?
I'm doing great.
Hi, Robin.
Hello. Is that
Ken?
Yeah,
yes,
hello.
It is, Rob. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Yeah,
all
it was cool and breezy in Sacramento today.
Oh, good.
And not 105.
It never did clear up here in the Bay Area. It was gray all day.
Oh. You know, that's why we were cool and breezy. But don't worry, it's supposed to be 105 again on Wednesday or Thursday, one of those days.
Yeah, but we had thunderstorms. And we had rain coming down in a half a minute.
Wow. I don't know if I remember what that looks like.
it sounds good.
I just found out, too, that one of the snowmobile people, and he works for state parks, and she's a snowmobile, also belongs to 4x4 in Motion. They lost their house in the Markleyville fire.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. And Sparks.
I was looking at the map today, and it looked like the fire blew right through Markleyville.
It did. It must have. And she's really nice. She's 4x4 in Motion, friends with Mary Krupka, and they're both in the Sonora Snowmobile Club, too. I forgot her husband's name, but he's really nice, too. I mean, everyone mostly is really nice, but, you know, you just feel badly when something happens. But they got their dogs out. And, you know, the rest of it, you don't want to have to replace, but you can.
Yeah.
Yep, the fire season. I'm glad if you guys had rain down there, maybe it'll make it a little easier with the fire season.
It's already dried out, though, and got up to almost 100.
Oh,
wow.
Before I came in here, I looked at the thermometer. It was 97.
Yeah, that's about right. Let's see what my watch says now. My watch says 82.
Oh, you're cool.
I know.
And it's a very comfortable 70 degrees here in Castro Valley.
Oh, my God. Don't even talk to me. I don't want to hear about it.
I'm not going to be able to survive in a couple of years when I have to move to Arizona.
Oh, God. Now, hey, Vinny.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Vinny. How you doing?
There he is.
I'm good. How are you, Ken?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Surviving.
Hey, Ed.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, Ken. And at some point in the meeting tonight, I'd love to make an announcement of my latest appointment.
All righty.
Yeah, it's a forest rack.
Yeah, that's tough, but cool. But I really like the new regional forester. I have her personal cell phone number, and I've used it. So that's cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's nice to have a regional forester that'll actually speak with you. I'm not saying it'll change much, but, you know, at least it's something.
How long do they last typically? Like a couple year or two?
No, Randy Moore lasted a long time. I want to say from 2008. I think. till now. So he had kids, and he said he didn't want to move. He actually came from Washington, D.C. Now he's back in Washington, D.C. But I think his kids got a chance to grow up and then go off to wherever they went off to.
Wow. That's a long run.
So he always said he didn't want to move. That is a long run. And he wasn't great for us, but evidently did really good things for employee relations.
Hmm.
I mean, it's nice to know he did something good now that he's chief of the Forest Service.
He's chief of the Forest Service? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big title.
Talk about getting promoted to a position, you know, like the Peter Principle.
Darwin.
I know that principle well.
I don't know if any of you guys, younger guys, have heard of that. Is that still a thing?
I heard of this, the Dilbert theory.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty close. Hey, Spencer.
Hi, Spencer.
Hello. Thanks for sending those minutes over to Daniel.
Absolutely. Hey, everyone. Mike and Garrity, I'm on.
Hi, Mike.
Yep, I could see you on the screen. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys.
This is Jared.
Hey, Jared.
Is Jarrett there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep.
Oh, hi, Jarrett.
Hey, Ken.
How's the baby?
She's doing good. She's doing good.
Getting any sleep?
A little bit. We're maintaining.
I know. I remember those years. Gosh. That's why I had my kids. Like, the first two were 4 years apart, and then the next one was 7 years. Because I really didn't want to go through that again. But then my daughter went off to first grade or kindergarten, and I started crying because I had no babies at home. You know, 9 months later, I had another baby. Yeah, one of those emotional
decisions. So you were doing more than crying then.
Well, I'm blubbering and going, I have no more babies at home. Yeah. But he's a good kid. I think I'll keep him. And Bruce Witcher is on, and
hi,
it's either Bruce Brazil or Jim. I'm not
That's
sure
me.
Which one.
Hey, Brazil.
Bruce.
Good evening.
Yeah, Bruce, I was trying to remember how long I've known you. And when was that commission meeting that we met at that hotel that I don't think exists anymore? Was it the Red Lion? It was a long, long time ago.
Well,
2003 or 2004?
Something like that. I know I've been going to the meetings for a long time.
Yeah, Lois was with us then. Time flies when you're having fun.
Oh, yeah.
How many do we have online, Amy?
Okay, let me go through. I have a new 805 number that just came on that I don't have a name with.
Yeah, that, Amy, that's me because I'm calling from my landline because the cell service here is so bad.
No, I've got you. I've got another 805. It ends in 76.
It's Lyndall James.
Oh, hey, Lyndall.
Hey, I'm calling from the other line, too.
No problem. It's just getting your name in the list, that's all.
All right.
Amy, can review it and Spencer can take it down.
This is Jim minute. Woods. Do you have me down?
Yep, I got you, because you and Bruce show up the same way when he answered first. I know you were the second one that showed up that way. So far we have people are coming on. There's much more.
Yeah, let's give it a couple more minutes.
Charlie Lowe contacted me today and said he was camping in Utah and unable to make the meeting.
Okay.
And I had to call in three times before it would accept the code.
Love it when that technology works.
We have 12 board members on. So if you want to start the meeting?
Yeah, let's go ahead and start the meeting. Welcome, everybody. I have 7:04, excuse me, on the 26th of August. Welcome to the...
This is July.
I'm getting ahead of myself. 26th of July. Welcome to our July meeting. Let's go ahead and get started with the roll call real quick, and then we'll get moving on. All right. Diane Mead. Diane's not with us tonight. Bruce Witcher, I heard your name.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Bruce Brazil?
Still here.
Lori Lewis? Nope. Jim Woods?
I'm here, thank you.
You're welcome. Ed Stoven?
I'm here.
Vinny Barbarino.
Here.
Bob Hamm. Amy.
Yeah.
Charlie Lowe is not with us. Mike Moore.
Mike's here.
Dave Cundy.
I'm here.
Hi, Dave. Jarrett McLeod.
Jarrett.
Evening. And Mike McGarity.
Yes, I'm here.
And Spencer Norton. Cool.
I'm here.
Welcome, Spencer. Okay, who are our guests tonight? We'd like to welcome you aboard.
Robin Reed.
Welcome, Robin.
Terry Work.
Hey, Terry. Who else is on board?
Ken Oyer.
Hi, Ken.
Hi.
Wendell James on the rock.
Hi, Wendell. Is that it?
Then we have one more. Tim Hersey.
Tim Hersey?
Affirmative, Tim Hersey.
Must be on
Welcome.
Mute.
Yeah. Okay. Welcome, everybody. Did you all get a chance to look at the agenda? Is there anything we want to add? Ed Stoven wants to add something in here. I'm going to put him under Southern.
Ken, this is Jim Woods. I wouldn't mind a discussion on changing these to Zoom meetings.
Okay.
And this is Bruce Brazil.
Yes.
After posting up the agenda, I got to thinking it might be a good idea to swap the positions, the ORIA guidelines, and guest comments and questions. Just in case the ORIA guidelines discussion gets kind of lengthy, be nice to allow our guests to speak up first.
Hold on just a second here so I can edit this. Okay. Guest Dan Araya. Alrighty. Let's move on ahead here. Amy, since you have a son that is a veteran, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Oh, thank you. I don't know if there are any other parents of veterans. My son served in the Navy for 6 years and 2 years in the Naval Reserve and was in the first ship that reached the first Afghanistan war. So he is a veteran of foreign wars, and I'm very proud of him. So here we go. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
United States of America.
And to the republic for which it stands.
And to the republic for which it stands. One nation.
Under God, indivisible.
With liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay. I sent out a report or a rant today. Just basically how, as Corps of Board members, we need to operate and present ourselves. And I hope you will all read that. And if you have any issues, we can talk about it. I'm available pretty much every day on my cell phone from about 6 o'clock in the morning till, well, actually closer to about 5:15 till about 6 o'clock in the evening, except Wednesday afternoons. So if you have any questions, if I can help in any way, anything that I can do for you, don't hesitate to call me at any time. Since we have lots of other things going on, I wanted to talk real quick about the political climate, which is really volatile right now. I'm back. The political climate here in California, which is actually very volatile at the moment, since we've got, 50 days to the recall election. This whole recall is causing us a lot of issues. None of the administration legislators want to do anything to rock the boat. And it's actually a pretty sad situation. And also, we're kind of in limbo until we get this squared away. And the other thing is that if the governor does get recalled, the legislator is not going to like it. And they're probably going to retaliate against us. It's really against the people that recalled the governor. And I don't like the way that operates. So that's all I got to say about that. I'm going to drop the politics for this evening. So anyway, I'm hoping that we'll get out of this limbo soon and we can get on to the business of keeping our recreation areas open. With that, Amy, you have been up to all kinds of good work this month.
Well, thanks. I sent out a pretty comprehensive report. I hope everybody's had a chance to look at it. We have gotten some good news, we believe, on AB 1512, where the situation two weeks ago, looked pretty dire. There have been a couple of changes internally. I have a meeting tomorrow morning along with Kathy, with a representative from the Department of Finance, and we are going to stress the sometimes with the environmental groups is that their demands become so comprehensive and so expensive that it pushes the bill into another category. So their demands now for the extent of the protections and the rehabilitation of the area are going to cost over the next 10 years millions of dollars, and that has changed the viewpoint of some in the legislature about how important this is to do now. And that's good news. So Kathy and I are following it up. Again, Kathy Lynch is our lobbyist for our coalition that we are part of, along with American Sand Association and San Diego Off-Road Coalition, the Off-Highway Vehicle Legislative Coalition. And I'm looking forward to it because I haven't had a meeting with the Department of Finance. On Wednesday, I will be presenting at the workshop in the morning and hopefully be able to post a link in the evening along with a few other people, part of the Subcommittee for Diversity and Inclusion. And we're presenting what's called the Faces of OHV. And just to show people how diverse a community is, and as old people, young people, all kinds of people, all kinds of vehicles, all kinds of people, and that's to highlight the diversity of people who enjoy off-road recreation. And the division, the OHMVR division, is sponsoring this. They believe it's going to be, and they're going to make a big production out of it later on. They're hiring a PR firm. So expect the Faces of OHV to become a theme that is repeated in the coming months about the diversity inherent in the sport. And all of us who have been out, you see all kinds of people recreating, all kinds of people on the trails, all kinds of people in the parks. And it's a good thing for them to notice and to do it. And they believe it will get some political clout. Working with Sierra Snowmobile Foundation on a lawsuit that they are funding. It will not cost Corvette any money. I'm acting as a consultant for right now against the Stanislaus National Forest for their over-snow plan, which is the first one to be signed. And it was significantly changed from their draft record of decision to actual final in very, very significant ways that we believe is a violation of NEPA. And there are also some studies that have come out recently that hunters will tell you that wildlife is more afraid of people on two legs, walking, hiking, cross-country skiing, and snowmobiling than anything that's in a vehicle. So they seem to inherently understand that vehicles pass very quickly, and that, but people who are walking at a pace similar to their pace will cause them to flee and disrupt the wildlife patterns. And I am looking for more information because I'd like this really to go viral, even to the point where we demand, and it may sound a little out there, but almost there need to be studies done. It seems motorized recreation does not cause any problems with wildlife, but there may be a need to decrease hiking and cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, other forms of recreation which do interfere. And this was a study done by three professors. It's peer-reviewed. It's everything that needs to be. I just need some other corroborating evidence that we need to really put this together. So I'm looking forward to that. Even if we can let our own people know that they are not the cause of problems. Hunters will tell you this, too. They will tell you that as they approach the prey on an ATV, they're fine. But the minute they get off the ATV, that's when whatever critter they're hunting starts running. They're not afraid of the ATVs. They hear the noise. It's not a problem. And they understand it for what it is because actually animals are smarter than we think they are. So that's kind of an interesting take. We're also using it for this lawsuit and demanding that the Forest Service go back and study, since they're increasing non-motorized recreation in the Stanislaus National Forest but did not review wildlife, the effect of wildlife and endangered and threatened species, that the plan needs to be redone. Excuse me, which is a classic environmental tactic that they've been very successful in suing over numerous times on numerous plans, inadequate analysis of threatened and endangered species. I've also been spending a lot of time with, some time with Jane Arteaga, which has been a lot of fun, going over the Berryessa Snow National Monument, because we have the, we might really get messed up with that. I would say we were promised something and it is not materializing. But I spent a lot of time with state parks and a lot of meetings and trying to figure out where they're going. And I have to say, there's no decisions being made. The camaraderie or just the general atmosphere among people is really difficult. The building that they want everyone to move into, and that will be in the beginning of October, that's been the latest news, that they moved to this building, is divided by your level. Every government employee has a level, whether it's a, I don't know, it has a number and a letter. And so all the executives will be in one area, all the deputy executives will be in another area. So rather than be put together by department or division, someone who works for the OHMVR could be sitting near somebody with mining and minerals who happens to have the same classification as they do. And people are up in arms. They're also up in arms because it's only for an entire building that's going to hold a rotating thousands of employees. There are 52 parking spaces or 53 parking spaces, and that's it. So the whole idea was to push people into using public transit, which there is some in Sacramento, and there is a system. But it's not great, and a lot of people do use it to get into downtown. But they have a lot of problems, so it's kind of the state working at its dysfunctional best. But going down to Hungry Valley was fun for a series of in-person meetings, first in-person meetings for a long time. I met with Don Killian, who is awesome. I'm happy to say that both our insurance certificates for the Three Cub Picnic, which includes Scout West and Fraser Park 4x4 and the Point Magoo Fright Night, our insurance certificates have been approved, and so they're ready to go. The state has said that in case right now it's the counties that are generating COVID restrictions, not the state, but L.A. County, and it's just something to take back to your clubs. They could possibly, we don't know what's going to be in October, but they just told everybody to be aware that something could change at the last minute. We don't know that it will. We hope very much that it won't. These are outdoor events. There shouldn't be a problem, but they're just letting everybody be aware. And other than that, it's just been a lot of meetings, but I'm looking forward to the two events this week, meeting with the Department of Finance and trying to influence the bill. Our other bill, a reciprocity bill, is sailing through, and that really is thanks to Kathy. And we have been reviewing, and I think Kathy is going to ask the coalition, ASA and SDORC, to lend some support to SB 227, which is the competition motorcycle bill. It has changed significantly since the beginning, but and I guess I'll talk to you about it afterwards, but we feel that it might be time to support the bill, which I think, Ed, you'd be happy with, and I think it's the right time to do that. So
yeah, they've ruined it. It's there's no way you can take a new bike out riding in the desert anymore. So I guess they're happy with it. Let's talk later, Amy.
Okay.
Wow.
Yep. That sounds good. And the other biggest problem we have is the 30x30 initiative, the governor's executive order. And we finally, to the relief of many of us, got a promise from State Parks that SVRAs are excluded from that order and are considered the baseline. That took probably, I don't know how many hours of talking and how many meetings, but that was finally accomplished, which I feel, for what we do, that was a big accomplishment, because the Sierra Club was really bearing down on the Natural Resources Agency to have SVRAs declared part of the problem and not part of the solution. One of the goals that I know the division has is to showcase more of the environmental work that is going to be going on, or that isn't going on, and all of the standards that they meet. I think on Wednesday they're going to try to showcase that to a certain extent in a workshop. We're not exactly sure how the workshop is different from the meeting on Thursday, but that's how they worded it. So we will be posting the links if anybody can't make either the workshop or the meeting on the OHMVR meeting on Thursday, and they are scheduled to end at somewhere between 2 and 3, just to make people aware. At least that's the goal. So they won't be running as late as some of the meetings, and that's why they split it, the issues into 2 days. So anyone that could be on there would be great. It'd be fabulous. Any questions?
Yeah, this is Bruce. I see there's an agenda item on that meeting on Wednesday where they're talking about the Wildlife Habitat Protection Plan. And for those of you who don't know this, they're reconfiguring all the requirements for the WHPP for the grants program as well. And now we have to go through Fish and Wildlife and basically use that agency to help prepare a plan, which is pretty onerous. There's no way anybody who's an ordinary grantee is going to be able to comply with that. You're going to need to work with the local land use agency, which presumably they'll have to do it, and you can piggyback on their plan like it's been done in the past. So there's a lot of focus on environmental compliance, which is probably in the long run something that's just necessary and is going to have to happen. So it's something to pay attention to. Also, I looked at the website. Both the Forest, I think the Forest Service and the BLM have information on the monument up there in Northern California. And it's very hard to make much sense of that. I mean, I would really welcome the opportunity to find some help with that. Even though I'm somewhat experienced in these things, it's hard to really know what they are planning to do up there. And so if we're up against a 30-day comment period, I'd like to know what we're commenting on. It's not very easy to find. So anyway, that's the Snow Mountain National Recreation Monument up there, which has been a problem for a long time. And supposedly some OHV advocates signed off on this thing during development, but I've had a lot of questions being somewhat familiar with that area. And I know Bay Area Riders Forum is heavily involved up there, and I just hope somebody will be able to weigh in on that. So thanks.
Yeah, that's true. There was an OHV advocate that was actually part of the planning. But basically what they did is they said they would continue OHV recreation in the existing trail system, but they put that as the last criteria. So after every other species protection component is analyzed, then they'll look at the OHV trails. So every other component of this plan is more important than the OHV trail. So the OHV trail is existing OHV trail system is not given sort of a pass. It's sort of a we're grandfathering this in. And that's part of the problem. So we can find watershed issues. We can find species issues almost anywhere we go in the state. The thing is, the trails have existed for a really long time, and they haven't affected the watershed, and they haven't affected the wildlife. But that isn't anymore under consideration. So that's where we feel a little betrayed, a lot betrayed.
Well, this just goes back to travel management, where, you know, the trails have to meet all these requirements that are virtually impossible to meet. And so This is familiar territory. It's an old trick, which I can't believe people didn't see through this and negotiate this up front. But we were given assurances that this was all under control and everything would be fine. And I have to admit, I was completely skeptical, understanding the layout up there, that this was going to really go the way we wanted. So this comes as no surprise. It just puts a lot of work on the back end rather than up front, where it's much easier to do. Not to be critical, but it is frustrating.
Absolutely, because that area has a lot of OHV use in it for all different kinds of vehicles. I've
it's
explored a lot of it.
The Bay Area.
Yeah, pretty much. It's one of the closest areas.
There is no replacement, yeah.
No, not at all. I've spent a lot of time up there. So I will be attending some of those meetings and talking to some local four-wheel drive groups up there that work in that Cow Mountain area, then also in Mendocino County, and see if they can help us out.
Great.
Anybody else have questions for Amy?
Oh, and just as Bruce alluded to, there is a grants meeting tomorrow. I think it's at 2 o'clock, Bruce. To take comments on the proposed changes?
Yeah, I'm set for that. Unfortunately, it's not an opportunity to say what you want. It's really just you have to comment on the proposal directly and only on the changes. So it's somewhat constraining, and I found it difficult to effect any change at those kind of hearings. But I'll be on it because I have read over those draft regs.
Well, thank you, Bruce. All right. If there's no questions for Amy, let's move on. Oceana Dunes. Anybody
yeah,
have an update on that?
Yeah,
yes?
That would be me, Mike McGarity.
Okay, Mike.
All right. So, hey, the Friends of Oceana Dunes just had their largest attendance fundraiser ever. We had it at the in Clovis at the rodeo grounds. Sold out 400 and raised much needed funds after all the canceling of events for 2020 fundraisers. This was an amazing and pretty exciting weekend. Our next fundraiser is going to be at Oceano at Fins October 23rd. That fundraiser is only going to be able to fit 200, which will for sure be sold out for sure. So Friends filed back in May their latest lawsuit known as the Quiet Title Action, and it argues that the public off-roaders used nearly 145 parcels within the Oceana Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area long before the land was owned by the public, and that the use created implied dedication for off-road vehicle recreation and camping. It also allowed for driving vehicles on the beach. Under the state law, neither the Coastal Commission, state parks, or any other governmental agency has the authority to prohibit uses established by this implied dedication. Once established, the implied dedication exists forever. And then, as many of you know, there were other previous lawsuits filed by Friends claiming that the commission's actions violated the California Environmental Quality Act, which everyone knows is CEQA. Other lawsuits arguing that the Coastal Commission violated the Coastal Act. And then all three lawsuits currently are pending in the Superior Court. The Friends Board of Directors has made it clear, Jim Studi has made it several times clear, that the Friends is in it to win it and are prepared to file more lawsuits and do what is needed to defend our rights and our culture of having families continue to camp and recreate on the beach and the dunes, which has been happening for over 100 years. So CORVA believes that we represent all of motorized recreation, and our website also states that CORVA's main purpose is to work with land managers for responsible OHV access and recreation opportunity. CORVA's website states that we are very active in the political arena with federal and state land management agency. CORVA is here to educate our membership. So many of you know that Jared McLeod and I, we sit on the board of the Friends of Oceana Dunes. So I can report on the information like I have just done regarding what the Friends is doing. But for a CORVA board report, I believe that this should be a report on what CORVA is doing to keep the fight going and to keep Oceana Dunes open to OHB. I know that Amy works very hard, and she has a great relationship with State Parks. I know that State Parks knows that we support them and their staff, but their hands are literally tied. Therefore, what would CORVA be doing if there was no Friends of Oceana Dunes? I also know that many individuals are fighting side by side on their own to not allow the Coastal Commission to take the Oceana Dunes away. Jim Sudi said that the only way to fight and to win is to keep Oceana Dunes open is either politically or legally. If we, CORVA, and if we believe in what the Friends is doing, shouldn't we have a discussion to further support them in their efforts? What are some of your guys' thoughts?
Well, since you mentioned my name, Mike, I'm going to go first. And what happens when we're talking about this, and almost every conversation with State Parks contains pleas, information, and really pushing them to Oceana Dunes on Oceana Dunes issues. And I have an upcoming meeting also with Catherine Tobias, who is a lead counsel. I don't think she's going to tell me much, but it's kind of good to talk to her anyway because she's a very nice person and she does support us. They are looking very seriously at this three-year mark, but they still think they have an opportunity to turn this around, maybe the next legislative session. Nothing is happening now because of the recall. There are no decisions happening now. Nobody will talk to anybody now. Nobody will even express an opinion because they don't want to get sideways over anything or have anything slipped that could indicate OHV support to the base of support for Governor Newsom with the Sierra Club and their allies. And they privately express regret, say they're on our side, they say we can't talk now, we can't make decisions now, and it sounds like an excuse, and it is an excuse. It's absolutely an excuse. But we have less than 2 months now until the recall. We have to get beyond that and then see. Now, the question would be, a couple of questions that we have, and when we had talked to Don Schmitz about the possibility of doing a ballot initiative and then decided that it is too much, and admittedly, since most of the fundraising would have fallen on me, I agreed with that decision because it was daunting, to say the least, to raise a minimum $5 million and perhaps as much as 10. I thought we agreed that CORVA was going to have a meeting, and I don't know who was in on the meeting, but I assume Ken and Jim Sudi and whoever else those two decided should be on the meeting. I thought there was going to be a meeting set up. Jared, I kind of remember that going on, and I also remember that we decided if we weren't doing that, then we would form a committee to fundraise specifically for both a potential Carnegie lawsuit and the Oceana Dunes lawsuit. But I haven't seen anybody take the responsibility, even form a committee or do that. Now, Mike and Jared, I know you guys are really busy with that. Did you have a board member in mind you'd like to parent that fundraising opportunity, or how did you envision that fundraising opportunity, that fundraising push to happen? I know how we did it with everything from the Ocotillo Wells lawsuit and the Commons Project and the Water Board legal issues that we dealt with, so I'm willing to help in any way I can, but there's usually some kind of group. With Ocotillo Wells, it was kind of Vinny was involved. I had my sounding board with Vinny, Ed Stoven, Desiree, and together we kind of set the fundraising goals as was needed by our attorney at the time. That's just an idea. We did the same thing with the Commons Project. We set the fundraising goals, and that was Bruce Witcher and I, and we had Randy Burleson, who started as the president of Rubicon Trail Foundation at the time. And various other sources, depending on what it was, if it was what the workshop we had going on, what it was devoted to. So I can know how it was done, but I don't know what you guys are planning to do for this. Can I promise you that every conversation and hours of time are spent discussing Oceana Dunes and possibilities? Yes. Can I tell you that actually this WHIP, Wildlife Habitat Protection Plan, is part of the strategy that State Parks thinks by affiliating, they very strongly believe that by affiliating with California Department of Fish and Wildlife, that they can actually push back against the Coastal Commission. But what we don't see happening is we don't see that pushback. We don't see it against Carnegie either. They have remained frustratingly silent on Carnegie. I mean, just absolutely silent. And, yes, can they do it after the recall on September 14th? They can. Because otherwise that bill is going to sail through. And luckily the governor has until October to sign it. Now, another thing we consider, do we want to try and run a bill next legislative session? We have the what I consider the best lobbyist. Can we devise a strategy? And I think, Jared and Mike, this is another question for you guys. As far as I knew, Friends of Oceana Dunes did have a lobbyist. And I knew his name, but I forgot it. So is there an opportunity to coordinate with Friends of Oceana Dunes lobbyists and really look seriously at legislation for the next legislative session? So I realize that was a lot of questions, but it has to do with, one, fundraising, which I thought we had already agreed to do. The committee that Ken and Jim were supposed to meet with, I don't know if it was just the two of them or other people were involved. I'm not sure, but I remember we ended that Zoom meeting saying that we were going to arrange that meeting and as soon as possible. And then the lobbyists and should we look at running legislation, even just to raise awareness, even if the legislation doesn't work, it might be very fruitful for us to write something that doesn't have anything to do with OHV, as we're planning to do with the ballot initiative, but can bring awareness to the of the overreach of the Coastal Commission to the general public. And that could be a way for us to get our concerns aired to the public at large without it costing $5 million.
So if I remember right, Amy, yes, we did talk about having a meeting in between the board of directors of, I believe it was the board of directors of CORVA and Friends of Oceana Dunes. And, yes, we did agree to do fundraising for Oceana Dunes. But we did mention that we were not going, I believe we mentioned we could not take any money out of our regular operating funds. But we would raise money for our regular specifically for Friends of Oceana Dunes. You know, we could put a donation box besides the CORVA donation box at Friends at the Sand Show.
Can we form a committee to really take this on? And
sure.
Because I know how much work it is to fundraise, and Ed Stoven will tell you too, because he did heck of a, and so did Desiree for the Ocotillo Wells lawsuit. And Bruce and I did it for the Commons Projects workshop to afford all the expenses. So there was absolutely no expense to CORVA at any time from either that was not dedicated, either Commons Project or the Water Board. We raised $15,000 for the Water Board opinion, I believe, at the time. So are there board members that want to volunteer to do this and take this on? And, again, I'm happy to advise in whatever capacity I have, but who has the best outreach to people, businesses, manufacturers that aren't, that we don't want to collide with the efforts or in any way compromise the efforts of Friends of Oceana Dunes. We want to add to their efforts. So we need people
Absolutely.
Who really have manufacturing comments, contacts, you know, I would say, Jim, with all your experience and contacts with Honda and going to King of the Hammers, I don't know, has Dave Cole been approached Has he contributed to anything? Is anybody? So these are the thoughts that I have going through my head. So are there board members that want to take this on?
Everybody should speak up.
Again, I'm willing to help. So I'm the first name out there.
I'm willing to help, too. I'm not a fundraiser, but I'm willing to do whatever I can.
Well, I mean, I'm happy to speak up. I'm happy to be part of the committee and representing, I guess, wearing, you know, both hats and sitting down and talking with Jim. Jared and I won't speak for Jared. He can speak for himself, but I'm fundraising for the Friends of Oceana Dunes on every level already that I possibly can. So that's already, I mean, that's already taken place. You mentioned a couple names that people can, could go after and do. That's part of it. So maybe, Ken and I, we can spearhead the committee. We can reach out to the board and see if there's anyone else that wants to be on the committee. I want to have a conversation with the committee that that includes other things that Corbett could be doing and not just fundraising. There's other things that we should be discussing, and Amy, you alluded to a few of those. But I mean, we, as much as we talk about how we're not political, I mean, we have been over the years, and so if this truly is a political thing, if it means that what Amy said was that right now is it's a political hostile, not, that's not a right word, but a political trying, challenging environment right now in Sacramento, then maybe we form the committee. We're patient through this the next couple months until things settle down, after November. But we put together a little bit of a more strategic plan than just stuff. I know fundraising was what we mainly are talking about right now, but there's more to it than just that. But I'll yield to Jerry if he has anything to say.
Obviously I would be happy to work on this committee, fundraising, anything. And to Mike's point, yes, I'm doing the same thing. At Friends of Oceana Dunes, fundraising, events, back-to-back, meetings, political stuff, meeting with recall candidates, talking with other people in political office, looking at running political office. Yes, I would be happy to, I would love to work more on the Corbett side with this stuff. But I'm already doing it. That's all I guess I should say. That's sum it up. I'm already doing this.
Jared, you and Mike don't need to be doing more. You guys are busting your butt.
Yeah.
And you can see it. And it's amazing work, and you're dedicated. And you can't be fundraising for Friends of Oceano Dunes, but there are board members other than you and Mike. So we need all the other people to use their connections. I mean, I'm going to approach the Currys. I don't know if anybody knows the Currys. I know the Currys. I have contacts with them. I've hung out with them. They do very well. I don't know why, Ray and John Curry and Casey Curry. I haven't seen any support for Oceana Dunes from them, for example, and they're pretty big. So this is what I'm talking about, these connections and businesses that you see at King and the Havers. Like, again, has anyone reached out to Dave Cole? But, again, until we have that meeting with Friends of Oceana Dunes 2, and you guys need to kind of, it's a little bit of conflict of interest, or maybe it's a little bit of help, I'm not sure which, to represent both. But does Friends of Oceana Dunes have a lobbyist right now?
Yeah, we do have a lobbyist.
Okay. I know I knew his name, but I don't remember it. I don't know. It wasn't Platinum Advisors. But why don't we get together with that lobbyist, put together with Kathy, and let's put our heads together, because I really do think And we have to recognize that it may not be successful, but running a bill doesn't cost any money as long as we have an author. And the author can be James Gallagher that we have now doing our AB 232. It could be Brian Jones, who I'm sure if it's a well-written bill would be happy to do a bill. We have to remember through all of it that there's a difference between politicians and politics. So CORVA works the political system. We just don't care what letter they have after their name. It's whoever is in decision-making capacity, whether it's a Republican or Democrat. And I have seen through the years, I've seen Republicans screw us, and I've seen Democrats screw us. So it could be actually even. Travel management rule was promoted and passed by a Republican, and that we have to remember that both sides of the aisle can equally hurt OHV recreation. Especially once they achieve the power, then it doesn't always come back down to us. We just work with whoever is in power. And that's not what that means is being nonpartisan, that we work political systems all the time. We just don't, we can educate about candidates, but we don't endorse candidates. For example, if we endorsed a candidate in this recall, it would work against us. We can individually support candidates. Any day of the week, I see all of you on Facebook and Instagram, and kudos to you, especially Jared, for following through with his convictions. You know, it's awesome. It's just not something we do representing the organization, but working political systems, absolutely. Can we, and this would take the minds of the lobbyists, can we introduce a bill next year, which is within the three-year window that was decided on March 18th, can we introduce a bill for the next legislative session that would bring to light a lot of the abuses. And that has to be a discussion that we have with Friends of Oceana Dunes lobbyists working in partnership with Kathy, our, as long as our partners, and I think ASA, and I can't speak for ASA or SDORC, but maybe Ed Stoven can pipe up for SDORC. I think OHVLC, our lobbyist coalition, would heartily endorse that. So that is completely within CORVA's mission, completely with what we do. Bob is having me write bills now. Sort of amazing. I can't believe I'm doing it, but I'd be ecstatic to do that. So if you can share that, Jared, and we can set up a meeting with your lobbyist and Kathy, that would be awesome because I think it's another way to accomplish at least some of the goals that we could have accomplished with the ballot initiative, but couldn't follow through with.
I feel that's an excellent idea.
I'm going to add a little bit to that, and I agree, Amy, when to your point about, yes, it's going to take active participation by, whether it's on the fundraising side or on these other areas, more of a presence of CORVA board members if we actually plan to achieve anything, even if that's just on the fundraising level. But I'm gonna take this one every day, all day. There is a ton nonpartisan, non-endorsing political work that needs to be done and can be done. I'm doing as much, and I know it's not by the book, and I'm not doing it on behalf of CORVA. And Mike's been working with me on all this stuff, and you know what? It might be a rabbit hole, but you know we. If we're looking down the road here on this 10 years or 5 years or whatever it is, it's only getting worse, and there is more that needs to be done on the political side. And I think this comes back to some sort of coalition of off-road voters again, something new, something different. I would be happy to head this up or work with whoever wants to take charge on this. I know Mike would. We literally talk about this three or four nights a week. There is more that can be done. I was literally told by many people that getting a hold of people who want to run for governor was like, you know, not very likely. And did I expect much from it? No, but I've got cell phone numbers for candidates who are running for governor now. And I expected, you know, nothing from this, just an opportunity. I mean, you know, but to the point, you know, that, you know, we're in a political limbo here and we can't get things done. This is something I've actually managed to get done Are any of them going to be elected governor now or later? Probably not. But that doesn't really matter. The point is that there we have a golden opportunity here without endorsing or pissing off the governor or anyone. I mean, we should be talking to anyone and everyone we can get to. I don't care if they're Democrat, Republican, they're independent. I don't care what political party they are. If there's any prospect they're going to be sitting in politics in California in the next 20 years, we need to get to these people before they're in office. And that's just my opinion, and that's what's spinning through my brain constantly. I'd like to further this conversation, you know, in further meetings, and I'd like board members to start thinking about this stuff. I mean, we could propose, you know, bill after bill after bill, and that's awesome stuff. But if the political climate is going to continue going any direction that's not favorable to OHV, I don't know what party it is. If it's going to be going in a direction that's not favorable to our sport, our form of recreation, and future generations getting the same opportunities to do this stuff, we have to adapt accordingly. And, I mean, I'm looking 5-10 years down the road. I'm not looking at this recall election. And so I'd like other board members to start thinking about stuff. I really, truly feel that this is the end game. This is what has to happen. And it's going to get done. I would just like Corva's name to be the leading part of this. Not me as, you know, doing it on my own accord or anyone else doing it on their own. I remember the days. I found really cool articles and documents and some stuff that Corva did that was just, I mean, Corva's still doing awesome stuff, but just things that just blown my mind. Like how effective Corva has managed to be over its history in adapting to these different political climates. I mean, we're in the most turmoilish, I don't know that sound, we're in a turmoil of political atmosphere right now, and this is something we really have to dig into, and we need to have some really lengthy conversations until we figure out some different moves.
We don't need lengthy conversations because Kathy has given us the path forward. The path forward is to court moderate Democrats. We have a Democratic supermajority. We don't see, and what Corva did before, we had a very, very difficult political climate. And it's interesting because this discussion a week and a half ago with Liz McGurk, who's chief deputy director, she worked for Mark Leno in the early 2000s, and she was talking about the difference between the influence that OHV Recreation had then and the OHV Recreation has now. And if Bob was on, he could tell you how much harm term limits did, but also liberalizing of California and the political climate. So what we need to do is we need more friends on our side. We need to court moderate Democrats in swing areas that have mixed districts. And, for example, Calra is in the Bay Area, and Butch Miner has him on speed dial and has his office on speed dial. Ben Hueso has actually abstained from the last vote in the Senate Natural Resources Committee and did not vote for AB 1512 when it came before the committee. He is a moderate Democrat from the Imperial Valley and has done us big favors through the years. So there are people like that. Those are the people we need to be talking to. Kathy tells us that all the time, and then Liz was telling me the same thing. We need to, once this recall is over, we need to get back to the very, very hard work, because many times we don't agree politically with some of these people, but we have to put that aside and say, this is for off-road recreation. This isn't about anything else. And all of us, regardless of our personal political persuasions, we agree that public land needs to be kept open for the people and not from the people. And from that perspective, we need more Democrats like Hueso and Eddie Garcia, who is an assemblyman, and a Democrat also from Imperial Valley area and happens to be really good friends with the chair of our OHMVR commission, Patricia Urania. All the commissioners right now on the OHMVR commission are Democrats. Roger Salazar is probably one of the most influential people in and out of government. He is a Democratic strategist. I have meetings with him. With a group of us have meetings once a week, and he is generally on it. He's not always on it, but he is on it. And what we have gleaned from him is amazing. But these are the people we need to go after if we want to be effective in California. Because even if there's a different governor, even if the recall is successful, there's still a Democratic supermajority. They can override a veto. They can do whatever they want to do. So the people that are being elected to the legislature mm-hmm. are the problem. And that's where you get grassroots activism is really important. And that was something that Ed was really involved in, that grassroots activism. He knew all of the politicians in his area, every single one of them. You know, now all the politicians in my area are Democrats, all the politicians in the Bay Area are Democrats, and there's, I think, what, 15 Republicans in the legislature? I mean, there's not very many. So we need moderate Democrats. We need to focus on them now. Jared is very, very correct about the one thing is we need a plan. We need a campaign. And we should be doing it, and Kathy would love us to do it in a more serious way. Right now we just send out alerts and say, please call your representatives. Mm-hmm. But they're not very effective. And where the Sierra Club gets 1,000 people calling in to support AB 15, we maybe get 10, maybe 15 if we're lucky, people saying, please oppose AB 1512. And there's a lot of areas where the people who are going to visit Carnegie, for example, from the Central Valley that now have Eggman is her last name. She represents Modesto, not far from where Ken Oyer lives in Turlock. She is a Democrat, but a lot of people who recreate at Carnegie and Oceana Dunes, for that matter, come from the Central Valley. Eggman should not be voting for 1512, and yet she did. And so we try to contact some people out there and say, you need to talk to her. So whatever the passion is, if we can bottle Jared's passion and get it out there and get the political plans, not endorsing candidates, but actually being effective at mobilizing our troops and telling them that these people, like Ben Hueso, like Eddie Garcia, like Calra, I think his first name is Ash Calra in the Bay Area, who has indicated support for Carnegie, those are the people who will make the difference.
If this is done right, we can steer the course of elections, irregardless of party. We have 7. We have 26% of the state. State's residents are self-identified off-roaders, right? I mean, 7 to 11 million off-roaders, right? You start bringing together industry, other people that are disenfranchised by the same policies that are taking out OHV. Next thing you know, we could start placing Democrats, conservatives. It doesn't matter. We get them to publicly go on record, and I'm talking local level. I mean, I'm not even talking the governor's office. I'm just talking, this is what has to be done over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And if we don't, I really feel like we're just going to keep going down the same path. That's all.
Well, Kathy agrees with you 100%. And we talked to Bob, and Bob talks about the historic apathy of the OHV community. I mean, here you have an assembly member, Eggman, from an area that's very, very mixed. For a long time, Republicans represented Modesto. And the Central Valley is very diverse also demographically. And that's one of the areas where UTVs are selling like hotcakes, and they can't keep them in stock. So why aren't the people who are buying these UTVs, why aren't they getting in contact with the legislators? Why don't they have this passion? This is what Kathy asked me, and I don't have an answer. Maybe it takes good old-fashioned barnstorming.
I'm not a board member by any means, but I get mailers like everybody else that say, this coalition sends out and endorses these people who are office. And I would commit to stuffing 200 to 500 envelopes a week. If I could have some addresses and some letters, I would be happy to stuff those envelopes for Corbin. Happy to.
Amen.
Maybe that's the way we could do that. Maybe we can talk about the issues and talk about our parks you know, say we need you to care. Maybe sending it out by mail is better than sending it by email. Possibility. Postage will cost us, but let's try it.
Time check. And can we get back on the agenda topics, please, so that we don't run out of time? Thank you.
Okay. It sounds like that's a great direction to go. Jarrett, your passion is amazing. Mike McGarity, everybody. Yes, this is going to have to be a grassroots effort to change the political climate towards off-roaders. So the next thing we have here is Carnegie. Bruce, you got anything on that?
Negative.
All righty. Amy?
Like I said, Carnegie is looking a little bit better. Possibly, I'll know more. I'll report to the board after the meeting with the Department of Finance. They probably won't tell us anything, but at least we can report whether it was positive or negative or what their reaction was. And really excited about the article. Ken got a preview of the article that hopefully is going to come out within a couple of weeks in a couple of new, different newspapers. So I'm pretty excited about it. I think it hits all the points, and it's kind of a hit piece on Celeste Garamendi and Mark Connolly in a very classy way.
It's so. Very good. Very good. Okay, what's new in legislation that we haven't talked about?
I talked about all the legislation, really.
Yeah, I think we did. Okay, let's let Ed Stoven jump in here real quick. He had an announcement to make.
Yeah, okay, I'm off mute. Yeah, I applied a couple of years ago for a recreation advisory committee, and I got a call last week saying that I'm being appointed. This is for the National Forest Region 5, which is all the forests in California, and I believe it's going to be mainly about approving fees in national forests, either new fees or increasing fees for camping and other uses of the forest. So they said we'll probably have two meetings a year, and they may go on for more than one day. I guess it'll be there'll be a lot to talk about. That's it. And also, there's a Desert Advisory Council meeting August 7th. I'm appointed to that committee also. So if anybody has a problem with any of the offices of the Bureau of Land Management in the California Desert District, this is your place to make your concerns heard. That's all I got, Ken.
Ed, do you want to advise on Bedford Road?
On the one in the Cleveland?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. There's a road that goes up Santiago Peak. There's a few different routes to get up there, and one of the ways goes up more from the Lake Elsinore area. And I saw on Facebook people were saying that a guy that lives along the road had pulled a chain across it and was blocking people's access. And people were getting mad. He actually brandished a handgun a few times, and it's very concerning. You know, we thought it's a public road. You should be able to drive up and down. So Amy made a contact with the supervisor of the Cleveland National Forest. And he apparently already knew this was a problem. It had already gone up to him, and they were working on it. He was talking to the people in the county and I guess his land office. And it turns out that the guy actually does own the road, that there's no easement, and that he can legally not let people pass there. I was pretty surprised when I heard that, Amy. But people do own land, and the road happened to be on the land. My thought was that does the Cleveland control land around there, where possibly a legal route could be put through. I don't really know the area very well, so it's hard for me
to
say.
I'll ask. That's a really good thought. I'll ask.
You could build a road around them.
As I understand, travel management can be opened every year.
It can.
So we could look into that. And I'd be willing to go out there and help if I could. I think Vinny lives closer, but it's kind of important. I'd be willing to help. I'm not quite sure how to do it, but is somebody else coming on?
Yeah, this is Bruce.
I'll copy you.
I've dealt with issues like this before. You can do a lot of it with map work online. You just need to figure out where the forest boundary is and look at the topo lines. You get a pretty quick idea whether there's something feasible through there or not. Often it can be really difficult. It's a costly process to do all the NEPA work necessary. But it is feasible. You can relocate or reroute a work, an existing route, under a categorical exclusion a lot of times. It's definitely something that's feasible. This is a problem in our area as well. As a matter of fact, I own a stretch of road through which there is no legal easement, as do a couple of my neighbors, but everybody's afraid to close it because it's used so heavily that they're afraid it would be challenged. But it's a common problem. We see this all over the place.
Yeah, we recently had a reroute up in Stanislaus National Forest on the Slick Rock Trail. And it was the same thing. There was a road across a corner of a piece of property, and it had changed hands, and they didn't want people traveling through there anymore. So it was rerouted.
Yeah, if it's a simple reroute, it's not that hard to do. It just depends on the topography up there and how hard it would be to construct. But the you've got species issues or something up there, that can make it difficult, but it can be done.
There's another issue. In the Cleveland, I spent some time going over the map of the Palomar district. You know, there's three districts that are sort of distinct islands in the Cleveland, the Descanso, the Palomar, and the Jabigo.
Yeah.
Well, in the Palomar, the guy showed me the different land designations of recreation motorized, recreation unmotorized, and I guess there's wilderness and there's wilderness study. So there's different designations to the land, and there's not that much that's motorized recreation. I was hoping to make a loop out of a trail, and I just couldn't do it where I wanted to, according to the designations.
Yeah, there what you got to fix that is get the forest behind doing a spot amendment to the forest plan, because we ran into that in Los Padres. They made everything virtually zoned backcountry non-motorized to where you can't even maintain anything down in the southern districts. And nobody's done this yet because it hasn't become necessary. But to relocate a route, you can do a spot forest plan amendment. It's very doable if you got the forest behind it. That's what it'll take. Mm. And don't let them tell you it can't be done because it can be done. But it takes some huevos on their part to push it through, because you know somebody somewhere will have a problem with it.
Oh, for sure, one of the Sierra Club types. Well, as I understand, the forest supervisor is recreation friendly. I guess we would have to make sure that the land that where a trail would be suitable is appropriately designated and has the appropriate topography.
Yeah, it's a soluble problem, but you'll have to jump through a lot of hoops. But it can certainly be done. It's just a question of somebody's willing to go out and raise the money to do the NEPA work, and because you'll probably have to subcontract that out. And then the forest has to be willing to sign off on it, which is usually a bigger hurdle. I've raised all the money to do relocations, only to have the Forest Service say they don't have time. So it's... you can talk to me about it if you want. I've done a bunch of reroutes. It's kind of an interesting project.
Interesting. Okay. I'll see if I can figure out where this is.
Yeah, that's the first thing to do, is just do some legwork on the maps. Most of us who ride know how to find boundaries and how to find land classifications and designations. and it's uniform across all the Southern California forests. I'm sorry, we're kind of going off topic here a little bit.
No kidding.
Give me a call. We'll take this offline, Ed. I can help you with this.
All right.
Okay,
thank you. Thanks a lot, yeah. Bruce and Ed. And congratulations, Ed. And I know you work very hard. You keep getting on all these different advisory committees. Great job. We need more people like you. and Garrett for his political work. Okay. The next thing we have on the agenda are... Yes.
Vinny Bruce. Had the Corva bags for the shows on as a requested topic. Can we get to that?
Yes, I'm going straight to that now. All right, Vinny.
Well, okay.
Well, I remember last, I think it was the last meeting we had, the bags came up. And I was just wondering if that was something that, we should think about doing again. I know we got most of the vendors that were put on the bags, to pay for most of it. I'm looking at what Mike sent me, and it only cost Corva $170, but we had Global Moto Motocross Giant. You know, they paid $2,300. That's a pretty big hit. But some of the other, like Genrite, paid $550, and Jimco Electrical Construction $350, and McKenzie's was on there, and PCI Radios and S-Pod, and they're all about $350, $400, somewhere around there. I'm just wondering, if you guys think that would be another good idea. I guess we had 25,000 bags last time, and Wayne Ford is the one that spearheaded that. But I remember at the Sand Show and the Off-Road Expo, but especially the Sand Show was the first one. Man, there were those orange bags everywhere, and a lot of those other vendors at those shows have bags too. And if we didn't have that many, we could hand them out. At our booth at the Sand Show, we had like three or four people at the gates handing them to everybody that came in the gate. But if we just had some bags at the Corva booth that we could, throw in an Araya and a sticker or something and hand out to people that came by, I think that might be a good thing. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it's an excellent idea, Vinny. It would be great if we could get people to hand them out. We can't just having them at the booth. Matter of fact, I still have some of those bags that I use at all the events, and people, I leave them hanging off the Easy Up, and every time somebody sees them, they go, "Oh, can I have a bag?" So
yeah,
they're well worth the expense.
I've got a handful of them, but maybe only 50 or so.
Yeah, I don't know. I got an inch or so of them, not many.
I don't know. The shows are coming up, so I don't know how long it takes to get those printed, and we'd have to find people some vendors that are willing to put their, so.
Why don't we just put out a thing to all of our members, all of our business members, and ask them, we're handing out bags, because you're right, Vinny. I was at one of the off-road expos when Wayne was handing out the bags. I think I took a turn handing out the bags, too. Those orange bags were everywhere. That was the coolest thing. I mean, it was really something. He worked really hard on those, too, getting that. So maybe we should just put out a letter and maybe take Tim's advice instead of sending emails. Let's send letters and say, we'd like you to help us, publicize your business and have your logo floating around these shows. And we can front the money and maybe recoup some of it or get some answers from them. How about that?
Yeah, maybe I'll get a hold of this, a plastic company. Maybe I'll get a hold of them and see what, 25,000 bags will cost. And maybe we can do the rest through email back and forth.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other board members have an opinion on that? Real quick? Nope. All right.
I'm for the bags. Yes.
Who is that?
This Jared, I said I am for doing the bag.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't hear any objections, so let's go for it, Vinny.
Yeah, this is Jim. I agree as well.
Okay. All right, so we're going to talk about a riot guideline. So we're going to switch the agenda a little bit here. Do any of our guests have any comments or any questions they would like to bring up? Any issues going on in your area? No? Okay, let's move on. ARIA guideline. So, Mike McGarity has jumped headfirst into doing the ARIA, and he's actually done quite an excellent job with the help of Diana and Ken Oyer, and I think he had a couple other people helping with that, Mike. And I asked some questions just basically acting as devil's advocate. You know, what's this going to cost us? How many do we need to order more? Can we pare it down? Is this a one-time, going to be a one-time printed ARIA for shows and different events to hand out? And then we would still have the online for our members. So there was a lot of conversation about this. Anybody got any questions about when you're writing articles about what we should and shouldn't say? We have pretty clear guidelines, bylaws, as to what our values are, what our mission is. And, you know, there was a couple mistakes made in an article, but it all got resolved. There was a little bit on both sides, but it's all good. And I think we're going to have an excellent ARIA coming out. So do we have any concerns about length of the ARIA, how much, what our content should be, and cost from the board? Anybody have any concerns?
This is Jim. I think the last for the show edition, which will go into quite a bit of people's hands, I think it was done perfectly. The pages are good. The dollar amounts, when you saw the difference in price, not a big deal. This is a marketing tool we just have to absorb.
That's basically my opinion on this.
Yep, I agree also. That's why I asked for 700 bags. And
right.
In reality, you know, we could even use more. You know, I'm figuring 100 bags a day for a show, but sometimes we see a lot more than 100 people in a day. So,
Vinny, right. I think what you do is when you go get estimates for those bags, you have to ask for the same 25,000. That's the only way you get the price break you get. And then once you get that number, if you bring it back to us, we can all go try to grab a couple $300. We're not going to get Global Moto. They're done. But that's, you know, just four other people. So the price we need is that enough bags to last a couple 3 years. That's about, I think, the same $25,000.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll get a hold of them tomorrow. I'll see what it is, and then I'll put out an email to everyone.
Yeah, Tim's right about that. You have to have that break of, like, $25,000, absolutely. And that really thin, you have the sample of it. It was really thin, but it was surprisingly strong, too. I mean, they didn't break, which I always thought was amazing. You could stuff a lot of things in there. So, and I think Jim's also right that if we just, everybody gets their friendly neighborhood, you know, four-wheel drive dealer or we can ask 4Wheel Parts to do it too. They're a business sponsor now. I'd say let's go for broke.
Yep.
So,
yep, I agree.
Great idea.
Okay. So we're all good on bags, and we're all good on the Araya. Anybody
Bruce.
Have any? Bruce,
hi.
Yes.
Yeah, I have comments on content because the land use article I write always overlaps with a lot of other reports. And, you know, I know the editor has some tough decision-making to do, but I really think the issue was way too long. I mean, and then there was a lot of redundant material. We have multiple reports on Carnegie, multiple reports on Oceano. I mean, I was kind of wondering what I should even put in on some of those subjects that I knew other people were going to cover. So, you know, it kind of falls to the editor to put this thing together. And, you know, if they see that there's a lot of overlapping content, they need to either take it out or send the article back to the author and say, look, you got to limit this to 2 or 3 pages. Use bullet points. Do something. Because this is just more than people are going to want to read. I mean, I got halfway through that thing, and my eyes really started glazing over. And this is an area of interest to me. So you can only imagine what the average user writer is going to look at. And I know Wayne Ford was really good. He would come back to me on my land use articles and saying, look, I want the 5-second capsule summary where I can just read the highlights, just the bullet points. Don't be giving me that much detail. So I think that's just something to keep in mind.
Good point, Bruce.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
This is Mike. That's good feedback. I like to have that option. And the next one, to be able to go back to the authors and say, you know, hey, we have several articles regarding this, you know, already, and can you, trim it down, bullet point it, that's great. One of the things I would suggest is if we were to take this Araya and want to make, additional copies that we could take to SEMA or to showcase Corva. I mean, we can definitely ask Chris to take some of the content out. Like, 5 pages was regarding the California wildfires. 5 pages were letters to the editor. 3 pages were spotlights on clubs. 3 pages were on Oceana Dunes. 3 pages was on the full-size wheeling article. 8 pages was on land use reports. I mean, we can. One 3 pages was the letter to the governor, which was a great letter too. But we can trim stuff out, and we can, I guess, focus more on land use, or if we wanted to focus more on whatever we wanted to whatever we agree that we want to really focus on, we can trim it back down to 32 pages. It just seemed like there was just a lot of lot to make up for 2 years.
Maybe so.
Go ahead, Amy.
Wasn't me.
Oh, the only other thing that I needed help with that it seemed like time, there was a lot of time, but then all of a sudden there wasn't a lot of time, was just help with the sales and the marketing. And reaching out, and I honestly don't know if every company and business that was listed in there has even, I don't even know if they're active or not active. I know that Corva is supposed to have a marketing committee led by the chair, which is the VP of sales and marketing. I feel that I should be on that marketing committee. And then be able to work a lot closer hand in hand with the VP of sales and marketing to really make sure that everything in there is current. And I don't know if anyone else, you know, went through the draft since last week and looked at all the businesses, but I'm not familiar enough yet to know if it's even correct or not.
Mike, this is Amy this time. Yeah. If you call me, set a time to call me, not tomorrow, except if it's at night, that would work. Wednesday at night would work, and Thursday probably at night would work. But I told you I would show you in the database how you can check every single business. We're really good about ferreting people out in there. Because of the pandemic, we did give some of the businesses, especially if they were mom and pops, Jared and I had talked about that before you were on the board. We gave them some extra leeway to make sure that they understood that we got that they were going through some difficult times. But most of that is over already. So the businesses that are on there are businesses that are paid.
Charles,
I would be happy
to.
Charles, no, I in the beginning, Charlie sent me an email and said he was camping in Utah and isn't on the call. But that marketing committee, we really, really need. And it would be great. I mean, I can't say how great it would be because it would be great to really have a solidified plan. One thing I will say that I want to make sure that we stress, and Chris knows this too, is that if we have, he's really good about varying the pictures to make sure we represent all forms of OHV recreation. So we never want to be, the pictures are always good, but, you know, we don't want to have too many four-wheel drive articles and not have, like, a California Dual Sport Riders article, because they just donated $4,400, which is amazing, and Matthew is amazing. So we want to make sure that we are representing who our members actually are and all the different forms of recreation that they enjoy. And there was never a time that when I was doing the ORIA for I don't know how many years, you don't have to use all the articles. And a lot of times I'd call people and say, hey, we don't have room for it in this issue. Can I put it in the next? And people always said, yeah, no problem. So that's never a problem. You don't have to use every article that's submitted.
Okay.
Again, I'd be happy to help. Just call.
So do we need a motion to move to approve the printing of the...
No, that's already budgeted.
Okay.
That's already budgeted.
Go
that's
for.
A regular. Remember when is Mike said...
Okay, well, is everyone of approval that we... how many do you guys want to print? Do you want to print the 2,000 or copies? Is that what we want to do?
We need copies for SEMA for sure.
Well,
how many?
I don't
SEMA,
know.
As a visitor to SEMA, I don't know if you guys have read the rules, but we're not supposed to hand stuff to the exhibitors.
Yeah, we did that once.
Check
it got into trouble.
Yes. Read the rules. It's there.
Okay. In the
so you could do it. You could do it on the slide, but don't get caught.
Well, what I was. Yeah. Go ahead, Jared.
I'll do it real quick. Sorry. In the lease for NAMRAC, we need to have a stack of ORIAs, and then I personally, and I know Mike would as well, and I don't know who else is attending from Corva. I'd like to keep a stack in my backpack. You know, I won't be just going random booths, but I kind of have a hit list of the guys that have supported our events and that I, you know, our business partners. And I make a point. I literally, like, that's the first thing I do. Mike and I did that when he was at Cal Four, and it felt weird because we were both going to the same guys at the same time from two different organizations. But we go through our hit list and go through and thank everyone who's been supporting us. And those guys, when we walk up, they're like, oh, hey, what's up, Mike? What's up, Jared? They'll want a copy, you know. So I'd say for sure at least a few hundred copies for SEMA.
Nice.
You know, we don't need to just walk through and hand them on every vendor table. But, you know, there's easily – I know I can easily hit 100 or so within the first day or two, so.
Right.
We
need 700 alone.
So we also have a list of vendors and businesses that we send packages to. And that's several hundred, isn't it, Amy?
Well, I would like to go through that list again with Wayne Berg. He is the master of the list. But what I was going to recommend, too, I remember back, and I think, I'm sure, Jim, you remember, too, that when That first year that we went to SEMA, remember we got all the business cards and Roberta put them in a spreadsheet for us, and then we followed up on all the business cards, and we actually got a couple of business sponsors after that, which I remember being happily surprised at, and we sent them packets with Araya's after the show, because we were able to get all the cards and do it, and then it didn't get lost. The Araya didn't get lost in the shuffle of SEMA, and they're trying to sell products to shops and everyone else who's there to actually, they're there to sell stuff from their business. So that's another way of doing it that was successful, and it was kind of fun because we said, look, you know, we know you're here to sell to people. We're going to take your business card, and we're going to follow up and send you information and afterwards, and it worked. So just another strategy.
Yeah. So what do we think? 2,000 copies, does that cover it?
Yeah, I think 2,000 will cover everything.
Because we want to have enough to go throughout most of the year.
Well, as long as they're not making out more than 500.
Pardon?
As long as they're not going to mail out more than 500.
No, in fact, we might want to keep some for, depending when the next one is going to be out, the November 20th event.
Yep.
We may want to do that. And I do have a question about the, a couple of questions about the November
20th
event, the 50th anniversary. Yeah, so before I forget. So
let me explain real quick about the pricing, just so everybody knows. So it's $1,956 for 2,000 copies. Every additional 1,000 is only $363. So if you want to get 3,000 copies, it sounds like a lot of copies, but it's really only another $363.
But then you also have the postage of getting them to you. Don't forget, like if you tell them, oh, send me 500 copies, they're going to charge you the postage to send you the 500 copies.
Vinny's already volunteered to go and pick everything up because he lives
here. I'll pick them up, but then I'm going to have 3,000 copies here.
Right, and so we never wanted to burden Vinny that much unless you want to arrange for them like maybe at Off-Road Expo or Sandsport Super Show to pick up the copies that you're going to need, for example, from SEMA.
That'd be perfect.
That.
Well,
and
I can bring them
to the November, the 50th thing, too, so, or give them to somebody ahead of time. We have plenty of shows
just
before.
Just coordinate it. Yeah, just coordinate it. We also have that show, that new show, Base Camp Overland. They have 1,400 rigs showing up the same day as the Rigs and Brews event. So we'll see how that goes.
I don't know if Don Alexander.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wants some Orias out there or not. That's probably not something he wants to do.
I'm going to send him brochures. I'm going to send them brochures because we have plenty of brochures. So it's just easier and it's lighter weight, so it doesn't cost as much to mail. It's just all the logistics. You get used to doing the logistics after a while. But, it takes a little while to get to know.
Yeah, this is Bruce. The sense of this that I'm getting is we should go with 2,000 because I know sometimes when we've printed a whole lot of these things, there's been large quantities left over, and they do age. I think it's better to keep material fresh. You don't want a bunch of stale stuff around.
Yeah, and it would be really nice the next issue. I remember when Mike Moore said a couple of phone calls ago, he said, you know, we have enough money to send the Rios to our members. And I felt really happy about that because it felt like we passed the threshold. And, on the one hand, we don't have that many members who are requesting it, but on the other hand, it's our history and our tradition. So we go both ways. But let's see what the members say after this. Hopefully a lot of our members will be at the shows and we'll be able to hand up the Uriah. And then for the next issue, let's see if we want to go back to sending them. I monitor all the emails and phone calls. I'm the one who gets all of those. And, you know, I'll let people know what I hear back. But we definitely want to release it by email alert as well and on social media.
Okay, so the consensus is that we all agree on 2,000.
Hi.
All right.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, the
all
cost
right,
on that $1,956. And I don't know, I'm guessing that is not including tax, but it doesn't say whether it includes tax or not, but
there's not tax on it. It's not a taxable item.
Not a taxable item. Okay. Good. Okay, well then that's that. That's it on the Uriah, unless there's any other questions.
I've got one for Amy. Amy,
yes,
have you gotten any information back from Daniel about how many hits our online versions of the Uriah get?
No, thanks for reminding me. I'll
You're
ask
welcome.
Him. Yeah, I will ask him again. I'm just not sure what we're going to get, because we tried to figure it out. One of the vendors one time wanted to know how many hits we were getting on the Uriahs and they're advertising. And he said it's just really impossible with all the links coming through social media. We get more people going through social media and downloading it directly, which that will not count as links from the website.
Is there any way to monitor that?
No.
Oh, okay. So I don't know where the direct links send a person, you know, in order to get the Uriah. So I don't know if there's any
potential there. Yeah, I thought I wrote it in the email that the direct thing. But how people have, and this is part of the marketing question that Mike has rightly brought forward, people get information in very, very different ways now than they did even 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. Most people get their information online. Most people want it very, very immediate. And when Bruce Witcher says, you know, it gets stale after a while, that's because the information that was in the Uriah is more time specific. So it's something we've wrestled with through the years to make it more like a club run would be indicative of something that they have every year rather than a one event where something happened. If you want people to take action, you don't put it in the Uriah because it's going to get to them too late. Mailing it was taking bulk mail 10 days, 2 weeks sometimes to get. So there's no immediacy with the Uriah anymore. So the story should be somewhat timeless, that it'll appeal at any time you have to pick it up. And that's a tough calculation to make. It's an even tougher article to write. I mean, that's hard.
True. Okay. So where we still have, Jim wants to talk about Zoom meeting, and we got the 50th anniversary. Let's go ahead and do 50th anniversary first.
Okay, Okay,
yeah, where
so,
are we with that, Mike?
Yep. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yes.
It looks like everyone should have seen the flyer. Registration free to attend. The dinner will be $25. We already have the 50th anniversary T-shirts. Those are the same price, $35. Huge silent auction raffle. Vendors are welcome. The on-site dry camping is free. We have the entire back area. It's exclusive rights to us, as well as the barn amphitheater. And then everyone's encouraged, if they want to, they can bring their own OHV for self-guided fun in the Started Wells OHV writing area. Some of the activities on-site are still to be determined, but we're thinking of the teeter-totter, little teeter-totter competition, maybe an RTI ramp competition, possibly the one where, I don't know, where they drive around with a little cup of water. So that's still being talked about. The Corvus store will be there. We just got confirmation a week or so ago from Off the Grid, so that is good news. And all of this will take place at Slash X Ranch on November 20th. So any conversations? I'm sure there should be some.
Yes, this is Bruce Brazil. Who's supplying the dinners? I got two questions. Who's supplying the dinners? And are any of the functions or whatever going on going to help support the Corva Treasury? Thank you.
The dinner is being provided by Slash X. They weren't sure on how much the cost is going to be, but it's not going to exceed more than $15 a person. So $10 a head will go directly to Corva's treasurer. Any of the activities in the back, we definitely could charge a couple dollars or whatever it is as a donation to Corva if they want to participate in the activities. And then, of course, the Corva store will be there. And then I'm hoping that we'll get a lot of sales in the store and then a lot more membership renewals or first newbies. We're getting a lot of people asking, can they bring people who are not Corva members? And I say, absolutely, yes. And then we'll have on-site a membership that they can sign up to. And I think that answered your questions.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I had
Thank
a question,
you,
Mike. Have you talked to Chris Waldheim or Randy Bannis and see if they could say something, you know, really nice? Randy was probably one of the closest people to him, and Chris, of course, is his son.
Mike, do you mind if I jump?
Yeah, please.
So we did have a call, I guess that was about 2 weeks ago, and we were just trying to help Mike with some of the details on things, and he was just trying to kind of feel things out to, you know, we're obviously getting closer to being in a time crunch now. So we did make a list of some, Randy was on that, Linda Waldheim, obviously, Chris Waldheim. We've started going through that. We sort of split up the list that we had so far. But please, board members, you know, I don't know if you want to send them either privately to Mike, myself, any of us, Jim or Vinny. We kind of split up the list that we had, but if there's anybody else, please send that over so we can be sure to extend a little save the date pre-invite to those folks as well.
I had another question. Can we do and invite all the people who won the awards and invite them to come and do an award presentation?
That's a great idea.
Because I have the banners. I have the banners and I have the plaques. So everything just came in last week. I had the plaques earlier, but I got the banners. Two of them came in wrong. They had to be remade actually a couple times, but they look really, really good now. So I think it would be great to have. And then we can have pictures and it could be a celebration, all that good stuff.
That's a great idea. We have two of the award, or do we have three award winners on the call right now? and then I was going to ask if Jim Woods and is it Wayne Ford, if they wanted to be the MCs for the event?
I'm working on Wayne Ford.
Excellent. And of course, Amy, we want help reaching out to our OHB commissioners and make sure that they know that they're invited.
Okay, we should do a save the date because we have the October 9th award, you know, event coming up, too, for the celebration of the 50th anniversary. And I've spoken to Bob. Is considered the program architect by the state. He's been given that label, so we want him very much to come if he's well enough. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I'll be speaking to all of them, too. So like I said, the last wasn't on last month, but the month before, you know, October 9th. I know it's the first day of the Off-Road Expo, but whoever can come, you know, see me. I have the master list. So we got a lot to celebrate.
Absolutely. We also have on our list to invite friends of Jawbone, a representative from CTUC, somebody from AMA, and then I'll reach out to Del Albright and Don Amador and see if they would be our special guests as well.
You know, we have the president of the of CTUC on our call at the moment.
Oh, that's perfect.
Do you, do all you guys know that Bruce Witcher is the president of California Trail Users Coalition?
No. I didn't know that.
Oh, you let the secret out.
Thank you,
Bruce.
Well,
I, everyone's got multiple hats in this on, in this group, which is so awesome.
Well,
so, do we need some type of budget for incidentals, you know, water, what party favors, decorations, or anything like that? If you think about it, think about that and come back to the board with, you know, a request for a budget if we need it.
Okay. All right. That'll do. Thank you.
All righty. Let's get the, we got, Mike Moore's treasurer report. Since we've been spending all our money, Mike, do we have any left?
No, we have lots of money. I just wanted to mention one thing. You'll remember we had a little bit of a kerfuffle with the rigs and brews in the raffle because we advertised that we were selling raffle tickets online. I'm hoping that kind of blew over. We're kind of ignoring it because we filed for a raffle permit, and we were turned down because we were not registered as a charity with the state of California. Amy spent a great deal of time and copied me on all of their emails, but between the Attorney General's office and the raffle people, they basically said, well, you need to file as a charity. We kept arguing, we're not a charity. We're a nonprofit. We're a hobby club. We are not a charity. A charity puts us in a totally, totally different area, which means that we have to file a charity report every year. We also have to pay a charity tax, if you will, have based on our income for the year. We also have to report all the people that we funded with our charity, and a charity, of course, is a different avenue or a different part of a nonprofit whereby your donors can deduct their charitable contribution. We do not qualify for that. But anyway, going through all of this crap, Amy and I discovered that for whatever reason, the state of California did not even recognize us as a nonprofit, did not know what our status was, and we basically said, hey, we have had this status for 51 years. This is paperwork that should have been filed way back when. We've never had a problem. And so, lo and behold, last weekend or the weekend before, I was going to go through all of my 12 boxes of Corva crap and try to find our original documentation to prove that we are a nonprofit. I fortunately made one more pass with the state of California and went out and printed the same form that just 3 weeks before said they don't know who we are. And lo and behold, we are now a registered nonprofit again. They know who we are. We're not a charity. So I did not waste my time. Okay, but
The reason I bring this to light, okay, for SlyShack and the 50th anniversary, we're not mentioning that we're going to sell raffle tickets online, okay? However, we are advertising a raffle. And since we have already been lit up once, I'm afraid that if we continue to advertise raffles, we're going to get nailed again. Because we can legally hold raffles, but we have to have a permit. Now, filing for the permit now should not be a problem. Since I've got the form I can send in that says, hey, this is who we are. But what happens then at the end of the year, we also have to file a report specifying every raffle we've held for the year, plus we have to account for every prize that was donated and given out. So it's a real pain in the ass. I mean, I did it, you know, with Forest Fest, but that was a once-a-year thing. And that was still a pain in the ass because a lot of times I did not get all the prizes from everybody. But to be legal is something we may want to consider. The raffle year runs from August to August. So we need to apply sometime here in the next month or so for next year. But, Vinny, with all the events that you, you know, take part in, it's just another part of the event that you got to keep track of, you know, from the prize standpoint and who donates what.
But yeah, again, well, Truck Haven's the big one. Truck Haven's the yeah. The only raffle that, that pretty much.
Yeah. But it's just something I want to bring it to everybody's attention because I'm just, again, I don't know whether the state picked us up, whether somebody turned us in. But, you know, if they sent us a nasty letter once regarding the raffle, odds are it's going to happen again. So, I'm thinking that that's something we probably need to do to be legal. So, and that's my treasurer's report.
All right, so we need to be careful with our raffles.
Yeah, basically, you can't do them unless you're a charity. And if you do it as a charity, then you've got to incorporate that in your IRS Form 990 and the 990N that goes to the state. So it creates a considerable amount of record keeping that the tax accountant is going to want to be paid to do. And that means somebody needs to do all that work. So, you know.
No, you don't have to be a charity, and that's the problem. We are not a charity, okay? But any nonprofit in the state of California can legally hold a raffle as long as they have a permit.
Okay.
And again, I did it for Forest Fest every year. It was never a problem. I just turned it in with my normal taxes. Did not cost me any more. Because again, you're correct. If you are a charity, then it's a bookkeeping nightmare. But as just a regular nonprofit, it really isn't that bad. Other than you got to request the permit, then at the end of the year you have to file the report. When I did Forest Fest, I essentially did them both at the same time. I did the closing one for the prior year and filed for my new permit. And again, the permit's good for 12 months. You just have to list your anticipated events. And then in the closing report, you have to list any events plus the income plus whatever donations you took in. So, again, it's something that's totally doable. It just requires a little more bookkeeping, you know, at the event to identify who donated what. So,
great. Thank you, Mike. Okay, we've got just a couple of minutes left here. That was good stuff, and I'm glad you saved our butts on that. Thank you, Amy and Mike. Okay, Zoom meeting. Jim Woods.
I just wanted to know what people thought about changing the way we do it and going to Zoom. They're pretty popular. A lot of people like them. So just throwing it out there to the board.
Comment?
With that, yeah, I got a question. Currently, as I understand it, our meetings are recorded and, you know, available for other people to go through them. Can the same be done with a Zoom meeting?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Zoom meeting, this is Mike. Zoom meetings can be recorded. You can pick and choose who comes into the Zoom meeting. You can mute everybody. You can mute one person. You can kick people out. You have full control over everybody that's there who shouldn't be there. You can stop people from even coming in. They can be held in a waiting room until they say who they are, because we do want to know everybody that's on the meeting. You can share screens. Like when I'm talking about the Oriya, I could be sharing my screen with everybody and pointing things out and showing stuff. When we're talking about legislature or bills or stuff like that, I mean, it's just nice to have those visual aids. And then it's also nice to be able to see when somebody's talking. You can raise hands, which I think you can do on this call too, but it's harder. And then we're not jumping on top of each other, talking over top of each other. It's just a lot smoother. We did a Corva board
right.
call last month, and it was just super smooth, and it went really well. I'm totally down for it, Jim, and the board should highly consider this.
Okay, so what I was...
I'm going to jump in for a second, because I don't know how many Zoom calls you all do, but I probably have 4 to 5 every week. I was on one today with the OHMVR Commission in preparation for some of the commissioners in preparation for the workshop on Wednesday, and out of everyone on there, the only time people actually put their faces on there or activated their video was when, and not even always, when they had something to say. So people are now turning off, and as long as everyone's okay, so the screen sharing part that Mike is talking about, that's awesome, and that does help, and it's good when it works correctly. I do know how to work it, so different people can share different items. The other stuff about controlling who comes in and everything else, we can do off of our existing. So as long as nobody starts with, well, you didn't have your face on and you didn't have your video on, and allows for the fact that even the last meeting that we had on Zoom, you know, Spencer wasn't on video because he said his computer couldn't do it, which is perfectly understandable. There'll be some people who will have their video on, and there will be some people who won't have their video on. But many of the board members, and I'm not going to say whom, eat dinner while they're on their calls. They check their phones when they're on the call. Just know that everything that you do, people can see, and that's, I think, why people end up turning off their video. So if we want to do it to share the screen with documentation, that's great. That will work. But, I mean, I can say that most times I will have my video off because I'm tired at the end of the day, and I don't look so good. It's been a long day today, and I don't think anybody wants to see me at the end of the day with my eyes closing. That's just me. You guys probably look way better than I do.
How about if Amy, you, and myself, and Mike McGarity get together, and we'll do a little practicing and education session, and then we'll come back to the board and talk about it. Does that sound reasonable to everybody?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and remember, right. We do have a page. Yep, we do have a subscription with Zoom. So.
Okay.
What did you say, Mike?
I said, yeah, that sounds fine. Ken, Amy, and
Mike Moore.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Corva does have a yearly subscription, so we do have a license.
Oh, that's great news.
All right. Okay, we'll work on that offline. Real quick, we didn't get the minutes online, so we can't approve them. We'll do that at next meeting. Other than that, I've got, unless anybody has anything that they would like to extend the meeting for, it's 9:02, which is our time to adjourn our meeting.
So I'll make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
Second, third, fourth.
Yay, Vinny. Thank you, Vinny.
All those in favor. Good night,
bye.
Everybody.
Bye.
All those opposed and all those abstained. All right. Great meeting, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for being on the line, and thanks for everything that everybody does. Thank you very much. Have a great
night.
Good night,
all.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.